This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Wednesday today. A little different this week. My wife wanted to borrow my little recorder that I use to record these podcasts because she's getting ready for... Oh, time to check the car for the squeaky wheel. Here it comes. I don't think it's getting any worse, although I had a friend in the car the other day, and I turned, he went, whoa, I said, I know, man, but I took it to the mechanic, they said it's okay, they don't know what's making that noise. I still need to talk to my buddy about why it doesn't make that noise when I go backwards. Gotta do that, gotta call him. Anyways, my wife is ramping up for Christmas. Christmas is always exciting when you're a music minister. And so she is ramping up for Christmas at this point. And the particular thing she's doing for Christmas, she is pre-recording a bunch of audio. And so she needed something that would record spoken voice well. And obviously this really little recorder does a great, great job. So she said, can I borrow your recorder? And I said, yes. And then she said, oh, wait, it's Thursday. That's your podcast. And I said, I'll move the podcast back to Wednesday. It'll be fine. So doing that. I think I mentioned last week that I had found a guy who does beautiful, beautiful Photoshop work. His name is Karas Ionut, C-A-R-A-S, and his last name is I-O-N-U-T. And he has the challenge, you know, to where you do a tutorial, and if you can come up with a result that's similar enough to his that he says, okay, yeah, that's similar, then he'll give you the next one for free, up to 10. So I got that started this last week, and pretty much worked on it through the weekend, sent it off to him on Monday, and after I sent him off the JPEG, he wrote me back and said, well, I'm going to have to see the PSD file, which is the Photoshop file. He said, because some of your stuff looked very similar to mine, and you might have just copied it out of my file, and that's, you know, that doesn't teach you anything. So I'm not going to be able to send you the next tutorial unless you send me your PSD file. Okay, that's fine. I actually took it as a little bit of a compliment that he looked at it and said, okay, that's pretty good. Anyways, but I told him later, I said, he's from Hungary. So I told him later in an email, I said, you know, we have a, I think that was my phone, either that or I have a hidden little clown in the car somewhere. I told him later, we have a saying in English, monkey see, monkey do. I said, so I'm just the monkey here. And I said, I'm just basically imitating what I see you do. But I said, beyond that, I said, I do kind of take this as a compliment that you want to see the PSD file because that must mean that it's somewhat similar to yours. And as I'm talking here and driving, I realize I'm in trouble because I have a note-heavy topic that I want to talk about. And it's dark. Oh, well, we'll see how this goes. Anyways, so I eventually did send him the PSD file. I used WeTransfer.com because the PSD file was 250 megabytes. And then he looked at it, and so he sent me the next tutorial. So anyways, I'm working on the next tutorial. Maybe I'll start that tonight. I don't know. We'll see. Depends on what else is going on tonight. Still got to get home and exercise and do finances and all that kind of stuff. And we'll see. Had a great week. Got together with some buddies this week. Some of my buddies were gone, so that was always a little sad. But got together with some other buddies this week and chatted. And I'm getting together with another friend tomorrow. And I just really, really love getting together with friends and talking, sharing our lives together. It's a good thing, really a good thing. I finished up, I think I'd mentioned before that A woman I know was working on her doctorate, and as part of that, she had to do a seminar, or I should say a group session. And so I agreed to be in her group. It was an online group. And so we finished that up on Monday, and it was good. It was a good session. She taught on the fruit of the Spirit, and she also taught on centering prayer, which is just another way to, another name for meditation, and specifically meditation that just focuses on being present in the moment with an intention towards God, not necessarily with words, but just an intention towards Him. Focusing and a quieting of your heart. And, you know, that's a very interesting discipline, and I'm hoping that I'm going to make an effort to move more into that discipline, because that discipline is being able to quiet your heart and stay quiet and stay focused. That's an amazing discipline. So I'm going to be working on it. Having this seminar has kind of inspired me to try this. And so what I'm trying to do is first thing in the morning when I pop awake, you know, just take that first 10 minutes and just be as still and as quiet as I can in my mind for 10 minutes. And then see if I can stretch it to longer. So I will say, it's going to be very interesting. I think that's about it. A couple of weeks here, the beta readers hopefully will be getting back with me on Amanda and the Cog-Shifting Imp. It's been a while since I've said it. I had to think for a minute. And then I'll have to hurriedly, of course, get that book put together and finished up and get that out of the way. So I can do a few more tutorials so I can get some experience under my belt, so I'm ready to gear up come January 1st and start writing the first book in Windfall. This is going to be very interesting. This is going to be just really, really interesting. I'm looking forward to writing this series. There's a little bit of trepidation in me as well from writing this series, because when you look at those parables and you really, really look at them, there's some things in those parables that are challenging. So it's going to be interesting. Look forward to it. Anyways, this week, what I was planning on talking about, which, you know, I can't really get to my notes, so I'm going to have to just kind of go from memory. What I was planning on talking about was a TED Talk that was done by a man named Rodrigo Canales, I think is his name. And the name of the TED Talk was The Deadly Genius of the Cartels. Of The Deadly Genius of Drug Cartels was the name of the TED Talk. And a lot of what he was saying in the conclusions that he didn't come out and explicitly say were things that I have talked about before, but a lot of the information he had really gave it weight. He started out telling an anecdote about a Mexican city, that the inhabitants of this city wake up one morning and there is a war going on in their city. It's street to street, house fightings, there are pickup trucks that are being set on fire and, you know, put crossways across the street for barricades. I mean, it's intense fighting, and it's between the federales in Mexico and the drug cartel there. And, you know, people are trying to live their lives, and there's a war going on specifically because of drugs. And when things kind of die down a little bit,
the mayor...
Oh, excuse me. This is worse than Thursdays because this is fast day for me. And so last time I ate was yesterday evening. And this is where I start losing energy. And about 9, because it's about 6 o'clock right now, I'm heading home. And about 9 o'clock tonight, I'm really going to start tanking. But that's when I go to bed. Anyways, so the mayor of this town wants to have a march for peace, a march to support less violence in terms of the way the governmental authorities are trying to enforce their efforts against the drug cartels. And so they get together and they're going to have this... going to have this march, and he gets up to give this speech, and he looks out across the crowd, and he realizes that half of the crowd is dressed like they ask everybody to dress in white, and the other half of the crowd has actually come to march in support of the drug cartels. And the reporter said this really is kind of the conundrum that you find in Mexico, that you find that, yes, there's violence and there's this war going on trying to stop this drug trade, but at the same time there is a support because of everything else the drug cartels are doing. And he started going into brand management, and he started talking about the scope of this of drug trade and how it compares to modern businesses in the United States. And he said, we like to think about this drug cartel, these drug cartels, and the violence and the killing that associate with it as if it's all just a bunch of thugs. And obviously the people who are getting killed were tied up in the drug trade, and so they kind of deserve to get killed. He said, but once you really start looking at it, that's not what it is. He said, as long as you have that picture in your mind, you're going to be deceived and you're not going to realize the scope of the problem. According to his statistics, if I remember them correctly, he said there's about 55 million drug users in the United States. This is the market, 55 million. And he quoted one figure that would be retail, but then he said if you just take what would be considered wholesale to the drug cartels, he said even though we know that some of them are in the retail business as well, he said if you just take what would be considered wholesale, the drug business produces in revenue $15 to $60 billion a year. And he seemed to think that it was probably closer to $60 billion for the drug cartels. The actual total of the drug revenue, once you add in retail, was much higher than that. It was somewhere around $100-$120 billion a year. And he said, to put this in perspective, he said Microsoft is a $60 billion a year company in revenue. This huge company, Microsoft, with all of its structure and organization, is producing the same amount of revenue as the drug cartels are. And he said, like any large multinational business, the drug cartels, and I wish I had my notes, because he actually had three things he said that any business has to be concerned about and has to protect, and I can't remember all of them were, but one of them was branding. And he said, in fact, the drug cartels are concerned about their branding. And he said, if you do any research at all, He said, you'll find there's basically three drug cartels, and he named them off. And he said, if you suspect that they're all just a bunch of people that don't know anything about business, that don't know anything about organization, he said, all you need to do is wherever you live, just get on the internet and start doing some research and start looking for some drugs. And he said, it won't take you very long at all. You will find a phone number that you can call. And when you call that, they will guarantee that they will deliver the drugs to you in 30 minutes. You know, this is like dominoes. And when you think about the kind of network that dominoes must have, well, these drug cartels have the same type of network. Because they've created that network, they've built the network, they've managed the network. One of the cartels that he was talking about actually came out of the military. They were hired by one of the drug cartels. Military persons were hired to protect the drug routes. And they did such a phenomenal job of protecting the drug routes that they looked at each other and said, you know what? We might as well run the cartels. And so they just turned over. They just turned around and took the cartel, this particular cartel, away from their masters. And this guy made a kind of little funny joke. He said, that's why you never have tigers as pets, because they grow up. And this particular group, he said, since they came out of the military, they have a very structured, disciplined approach to everything. And he said, in fact, they actively recruit members of the military. So there are posters that are posted around that'll say, we'll pay you better, you'll have better health benefits, you know, we'll take care of your family. I mean, they're an organization. Strong organization. There's another group. I think this group is called the Knights of Templar. And what makes them, distinguishes them of their brand, is that they will come in, and wherever they settle down and wherever they set up their headquarters, they take care of the people in that town and that village. You know, they protect them. They make sure that there isn't a lot of drugs there. There you go. But the point was that each of these organizations are massive. They are well organized. They are focused. And it's all because this is a $60 billion with a B. This is a $60 billion proposition. I mentioned it before on the podcast, and I can't remember the exact figures. I will do my best. But I was watching a show. My wife and I, many years ago, had gone down to Branson, and you know, I had the TV on while she was finished getting dressed, and it was about the drug cartels. And a federal agent held up a pencil, and he said, "This is what cocaine is like. I can buy this pencil for $1, and I can sell it for $1,700." Dollars. And when I heard that, I thought, oh man, if there's that kind of markup in it, forget it. It's over. It's done. You're never going to stop this. There's too much money. And the heartrending thing to me that came out of this talk was that over the last, I think he said 7 years, 100,000 people have died because of the war in the drug cartels and the war in Mexico. He said a former president of Mexico said, poor Mexico, so far from God and so close to the United States. And the problem is we've got the customers. And wherever customers have a demand, somebody's going to fill it. And what these drug cartels are doing is simply filling a demand. If the demand wasn't there, they wouldn't be filling it. But the side effect of that is that our neighbor directly to the south that shares that border with us, it is a battle zone. Because we have 55 million people in the United States that want to do drugs. And we have said, you're not allowed to do drugs. And they go and do drugs anyway. And so, instead of them being able to go down to their, you know, local store and buy their packets of cocaine, like they can their packs of cigarettes and their bottles of alcohol, instead of that, all that money gets routed to organizations that use violence to promote their organization. I'm getting my mail. One moment. And I'm not sure how we can continue on a path without recognizing that what we're doing with the war on drugs is not working, and it will never work, ever, because there's too much money. And we can shake our fist and rail and throw enforcement dollars at it, but we'll never stop it. And not only will we never stop it, we will turn the country to the south of us into a war zone and keep it a war zone. Until we decide that there might be something better to do. I'm backing into my garage one moment. And I'm thinking that the something that's better to do would be to let people do drugs if they want to do drugs. But make sure that the product is regulated, like cigarettes are regulated. You know, make sure, I didn't quite get my car in straight. Make sure that we tax it. And the government gets a revenue off of it. Because the side effect then is I don't really think you're going to change the number of people who are doing drugs. Because even with all the harsh sentences that have been put in place for drug use and all the people that have been incarcerated for drug use, I'm not really sure we've cut down on drug use that much. But what we will be doing, at least, at the very least, is legitimizing this trade so that market share is determined by good business practices as opposed to being determined by torture and killing. I guess I'm just too big of a believer in free will to look at the side effect of what we're doing by having this enforced prohibition on drugs that's not really working and causing such pain and suffering. That my philosophy is, you know what? People want to do drugs, let them do drugs. And, you know, maybe we can do a little better job educating, do a little better job being in relationship with people, helping people to realize that that's not a great path. I'm having a hard time understanding why this is so different from cigarettes or alcohol or food, for that matter, and why we feel justified in turning our neighbor country to the south into a battlefield as opposed to going at this in a different way. That's my stomach growling because I haven't had anything to eat. But in the meantime, of course, nothing is going to change overnight. But I thought it was a very interesting TED Talk. You should watch it. I think it's pretty cool. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.